Right now, live in the studio, I have Mr. Tim Ingalls, who is one of my favorites. He's always in here talking about really nerdy stuff, but is absolutely fascinating, and this is no exception. Tim, I wanted you to come in here and tell us about the small-scale development movement lecture that you have sponsored with Kevin Shepard. Now, looking through what it is that we're about to talk about, it's pretty heady stuff, but it's extremely important. And you're someone who is very roped in with trying to make the Texas Panhandle and Amarillo proper way more livable, sustainable, and smarter urban planning. So welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Can you hear you?
Kind of, yeah. I think so.
So tell us about this lecture, which is happening this Thursday night, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Amarillo College downtown campus. Folks, that's at 1314 South Polk. What is the gist of this?
Basically, in the United States, ever since World War II, the U.S. has embarked on a sort of suburban development pattern. You know, if you look at our older towns and our older cities, you used to see sort of dense building types, walkable neighborhoods. And then pretty soon thereafter, we moved to suburban car-centric development pattern. And that's sort of just been the norm that we've all grown up with and what we expect more or less from cities. What is less well understood but is growing now as an idea is that basically the tax value per acre or the ability to maintain those developments over time is not really fiscally sustainable for cities. And so, you know, even in Amarillo, for example, you go to city meetings and there's lots of discussion of, well, we want, you know, this thing and we want, you know, we want to fix whatever it is. We want to fix the park here. Or we want this street repaved. And the city is trying its best to meet those needs, but what isn't well understood is that the scale of liabilities that the city has in maintaining the roads, the sewer, the electricity, far, 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 far outweighs any of the income that it receives. And the main reason for that is because of our development pattern.
So there's not enough cash to go around to just maintain what we have and do these other things.
Right.
And that's because we're building too wide, too far.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of it comes down to if you build a development that requires driving, then you have to have a lot of parking. We tax more on the value of the building than we do on the parking lot itself. And so the more that we convert land, you know, the more that we take a building that maybe could be used productively and we demolish it and put a parking lot on there, well, we're losing that building, but we're also losing the taxable value that building could provide to the city. And it's kind of complex because some of the city codes also make it very challenging for someone to redevelop that building. But at the same time, you know, I think the city and Amarillo citizens don't understand fully and aren't having this conversation. So what we're bringing on Thursday is an engineer who is doing a fiscal analysis of the city and Potter and Randall counties to forecast, let's say, 25 or 30 years if we wanted to rebuild all of our roads, if we needed to replace our sewage system, how much would that cost? And then look at how much tax revenue we can generate. And if what you'll find probably is that, you know, we're currently downtown, right? And if you look at some of these 4 and 5 story buildings, those are the developments where the city is actually able to make any money.
And those are mostly the older buildings, right?
Exactly. Mm. I mean, there's maybe a few, but in general, if you build 1 story buildings, it is just a lot of liabilities, a lot of maintenance liabilities for the city that they have to maintain, and they're not really getting enough income to service that over the long time. And that's why you see decline of neighborhoods as well. You know, older neighborhoods, they sort of fall into decline, and then the development pattern moves outside of that. And
because it's cheaper to build new than it is to renovate older.
Right. And part of that's also due to city codes. That's another part of the issue. But so now the city has to not only maintain that old neighborhood But they also have to maintain this new neighborhood once those liabilities come due, once those roads become 15 or 20 years old.
So this sounds like something, obviously, it's not just, you know, we're talking about specifically how he's doing this analysis on Amarillo, but this, you go up and down the High Plains, all of the, you know, Dodge City, Garden City, Colby, Hayes, all of these different towns of size, the same things are very much, it's very much the same plan.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, this is an issue that plays out throughout the world, but certainly throughout the U.S., because we really embarked on what Chuck Marone, the founder of Strong Towns, calls the suburban experiment. And there's been no other time or place where a whole continent has built out a untested development pattern. And that's basically what we've done in the United States.
And tell us a little bit about Strong Towns.
Yeah, so Strong Towns is, there's a lot of different people talking about this issue, but Strong Towns is a nonprofit that formed to specifically ask fundamental questions about our development pattern and how that affects our city finances. And, you know, I came to this originally as a bicycle activist. I was really hoping to get better trails or bike lanes in town, and it never really got much traction. But the more I dug into it and learned about it, the more I realized that
there's no money for it.
And why is there no money for it? Because we're building in a way that doesn't create wealth, right? And so actually, if we build in a way that does create useful, walkable, and bikeable spaces, there'll be higher tax revenue per acre. And if you prefer that type of living, as I think many people do, you'll have a higher quality of life as well. So we just need to kind of change our paradigm on what we think a city can be and should be. And we need the data to back up why it's so important and to discuss that with the local population.
Very cool. Well, this, I mean, obviously a lot of folks, you know, have visited larger markets, larger cities that are very different than what we have here on the High Plains. And you have those bike paths and you have those green spaces, you have those walkable spaces. And it doesn't take long till people are really using them. And then you know, fewer cars, able to do this. I'm from a place where if you don't have a car, you have to sit in one place. You just might as well sit and rot. You know, the Midwest very much is very car heavy. But we're seeing little things in cities where, oh, we finally got this light rail. Now we have this. Now we have the buses are going to be beefed up a little bit. What do you see as, what's your hope for having these conversations and encouraging people to have these conversations with the people who are able to be in a position to build and to get that revenue going? What's your hope for this town?
Yeah, there's a lot of different facets to this. You know, I'm the chairman of the Pedestrian Bike Committee, and that's been kind of a challenging position because, you know, even in having these discussions with city staff, with other Amarillo citizens, they're still thinking in a car-centric paradigm. And in the car-centric paradigm, they just see every reason why we cannot make these changes. So it's been really frustrating, to be honest. But I'm hoping, you know, but there are allies within the city, and I'm hoping that we can, the more that we educate ourselves and learn from one another, that we can really start to make block by block or small project changes so that we can start to build these types of developments that I think a lot of people want. And once we start to see it and once it becomes attractive, I think more and more people will see the value in it. Another facet of this is, so this is the first lecture and we're hoping to host another one 6 weeks thereafter. And that's going to bring in an urban redeveloper from the Dallas area. And he works in what he calls the hood. You know, he works in older neighborhoods and he figures out ways to reactivate suburban kind of moribund properties.
Great use of moribund.
Yeah, thank you. Just not very, you know, vacant, basically
blight.
Vacant. Yeah, blighted
urban
property.
Blight. And
so he has a lot of strategies for that. And this nonprofit that the Tecovas Foundation is partnering with, they do trainings throughout the United States to train local people to become small developers in their neighborhood. Because really, at the end of the day, if you want to see change in your neighborhood, it has to be built. And so if there's vacant lots or if there's a lot of rundown houses or apartments, you know, then those people who feel called to do this, they can themselves become entrepreneurs and small developers working in their neighborhoods. And at the same time, you need the city to partner with them and maybe change some of the fee structures or change some of the zoning laws so it's more easy for them to do these projects in a lot by lot basis. Because currently most development is geared towards greenfield. And so the fee structure and everything is more for like 20 acres and above. But if we're doing like, you know, third acre lots or half acre lots or whatever it is, it's a slightly different business model.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just, you know, seeing a little bit more, you know, every time we hear anything on NPR News about, you know, different kind of like, you know, urban blights and people that are doing, you know, reinvigorations and, you know, preservation, turning old lots into urban gardens and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It does change the chemistry of the people that are living around that space.
Yeah, absolutely. And this really goes down as well to, this really goes down a lot to driving in general. You know, I think people, we're all so used to driving. We don't realize how delicate that is for any pedestrian or any cyclist and how dangerous cars are, really.
Are you trying to take our cars?
Well, see, that's an interesting question. I'm trying to, I think one thing that's required to really have successful urban developments is a honing in of the car. So slower travel speeds and, you know, a mix of uses of the street. You know, we've also hosted a workshop the Pedestrian Bike Committee did last year on road diets. And those are very interesting and important ways that you can still get basically the same traffic flow, but you make the street a lot more human. It feels better to shop or, you know, live right next to it because you don't have high traffic speeds going by. And also it's much safer for a cyclist or a pedestrian to be on the road or to cross the road. And so I think another big part of this is in those areas where we want to drive this kind of development, we do need to take the roads from a suburban standard back to an urban standard. And if you look at the evolution, you know, some of these roads back when downtown or maybe the 6th Street area really was a dense community, vibrant community, those road speeds were probably slower, but over time they've widened them in service just to traffic speed. And that's what the traffic engineers study. They just say traffic speed. But really that's an outdated model and we need to be thinking about what is the productivity of this road in terms of does it allow for ample parking? Does it allow for mixed use of bicycle and pedestrian, and does it create a space where people would want to invest in commercial or housing development?
You know, property tax codes is really sexy talk here on High Plains Morning, but mm-hmm. You know what? You're making it very fascinating.
Yeah, well, thank you.
This obviously is an issue that, you know, could be applied anywhere up and down the High Plains. So this is, I hope folks all across the region listening right now are, you know, if they have any questions, they can go to incrementaldevelopment.org. And that is indeed where this information about this lecture will be about Kevin Shepherd. He's going to be speaking Thursday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Amarillo College downtown campus at 1314 Polk Street in Amarillo, Texas. Part of the small scale development movement hosted by Tecovas Foundation here in Amarillo.
Yeah, and one more comment. I'm working on this at current, but we might record the lecture. And so if people are interested, we could maybe post a link for that for those
Absolutely.
Who can't make it. Because, I think we are, you know, a High Plains community, and I think that these issues are important for people across the High Plains. The thing that the main reason I wanted to do it in this way is we're actually using city data. And so we'll have a very specific conversation about
viability.
Yeah, of mm-hmm. Amarillo. And one more comment on that. you know, our family owns farmland in the Bushland Amarillo interface. And if you notice, there's all of these section by section, 1 square mile by 1 square mile developments going out in there. And I think that's a very interesting thing to study as well, because basically you have the state requires ex-urban development to be 1 acre lots if it's not on city sewer. And yet the developer is selling those lots and they're assuming that the county will maintain those roads, and the homeowners buying those are also assuming that the county will maintain those roads. And yet no one's really done the long-term study to see, well, does the tax value that those houses raise, does that pay for all of the maintenance that they're expecting to receive in the long term? So I think that's a big question that has not really been answered. And I think it's something that I think we as a community need to explore.
Well, you know what they say when you assume.
What?
You make an ass out of you and me. I can't believe I had to finish that, folks. Well, this is fabulous. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this very important issue. As someone who's lived in very, very suburban areas to very, very urban areas to very, very rural areas, it is definitely something that's going to be really interesting to see as we move forward all across the United States, you know, seeing, fewer cars and how that changes things. And people just don't think it's possible until you see, okay, we're going to start here and we're going to do this. And these main arteries will have a bike lane. And then, oh, how do we protect that? Okay, we're going to put up pylons. And it's just incremental changes. But
yeah, no, I agree. And that's something else I want to mention. You know, even there's a lot of towns across the High Plains here that are small and think maybe this urbanism doesn't apply to me. But really, I'm sure they're facing the same issues, which is they're probably trying to maintain large swaths of acreage that have very low tax productivity. And so really, the more that they can build in an urban form, that might help, A, their quality of life for the people living there, and B, their tax value per acre. And I don't, you know, we have developed so far along a car-centric development pattern. I don't think that's going away. We just need to rebalance the pedestrian, the cyclist, and even now, like the pedi scooter, and there's all sorts of different, small-scale human forms of transportation. But we need to balance all that with the car as opposed to just making everything completely car-centric.
Yeah, and we have pedicabs now that go from Hodgetown all up and down Polk Street. So even downtown Amarillo, You've got somebody with really, really kicking thighs there, dragging people from the parking garages over and moving around.
Right.
So that's it's strange, but you're like, oh, look, these are things that we normally just see in larger markets, and they're already starting to happen here on the High Plains. Well, Tim Ingles, thank you so much for coming in and sharing this information about this lecture. Kevin Shepherd's going to be speaking on Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m., and I'll get a post up about this. Folks, if you have any questions, incrementaldevelopment.org or strongtowns.org has a lot of this information. If folks want to get in touch with you, Tim, how can they do that?
You could send me, you can call me at 806-420-5288. That's 806-420-5288. Or you can email me at timothy.ingles@gmail.com.
And that's
ingalls.
Got it.
Just like Little House on the Prairie, right? Aww. We're in the High Plains, aren't we?
We are. All right. Well, I'm going to play a song for you since you're trying to turn it around. Here's Lucius off of Wilda Woman, Turn It Around on High Plains Morning.